On a Tuesday, we're focused on heart health and the coronavirus. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Since the start of the pandemic, we've learned that people with cardiovascular disease or related conditions like diabetes or high blood pressure, they're at greater risk for severe COVID-19 illness. And the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, recommends that the more than 30 million Americans who live with heart disease practice extra precautions to avoid infection. What questions do you have about how COVID affects the heart? Do you have high blood pressure or heart disease? Are you taking additional precautions now? We're at 800-642-1234 for all your heart health questions. Dr. Allison Schwartz is an infectious disease specialist with SSM Health Dean Medical Group. Dr. Schwartz, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Jimmy Sidhu is a cardiologist also with SSM Health Dean Medical Group. Dr. Sidhu, welcome to you.
Hi, Kate. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, Dr. Sidhu, let's begin. If you have underlying health conditions like high blood pressure or cardiovascular disease, it's known, it's documented in your medical records. How does that affect how your body might respond to COVID?
I think the main concern is that people who have underlying medical issues may also have underlying heart disease, which, as we've been seeing, this coronavirus does seem to affect the heart. And if you have underlying medical conditions, the reserve you have to take another hit may not be enough for you to sustain yourself and those other people that are getting very sick in the hospital. So the studies that have been done showing that people hospitalized who tend to get sicker do have a higher incidence of having some of these underlying medical conditions.
So if you have other complications going on in your medical history, that compounds, if you will, the situation if you're faced with COVID-19.
Correct. What we have at this point are studies that are what we call observational, meaning that we see associations. You know, we can look at a population of hundreds or thousands of people that have been hospitalized and ask a question to say, okay, what are the commonalities between these people who are getting sicker? And so we can pick up that association. What we don't have is causation.
Mm-hmm.
So what we don't know is that, is there a connection between high blood pressure specifically that causes somebody to maybe get coronavirus or get sicker from coronavirus? There was initially a concern that perhaps some of the medications may be a potential cause, but then there have been studies that have come out over the last couple of months showing pretty definitively that taking people off the medications doesn't seem to help them in terms of their illness from coronavirus.
Dr. Schwartz, as an infectious disease specialist, how often are you seeing, at this point, a COVID-19 patient who's also dealing with heart problems?
Sure. I think, you know, I would say all of the patients who are seen, not all of, but a majority of the patients who are seen get admitted to the hospital at this point do have some underlying cardiac condition or other medical condition, which is leading to their becoming sicker from the disease and then getting hospitalized. And even when it comes to, well, you know, maybe someone's never had a heart attack, but they do have a diagnosis of high blood pressure, that is, you know, a heart-related disease and therefore putting you at higher risk, just as Dr. Sidhu mentioned.
Even so, if you have that high blood pressure under control through medications?
I mean, there are other factors that play into it. And just like Dr. Sidhu mentioned, we're still trying to figure out exactly the causation and sort of the direct correlation with all of this. But I can say from clinical experience, yes, oftentimes even patients who may be well controlled with their medications, depending on, you know, one of the greatest risk factors being age, we may still see them end up hospitalized from their disease.
If you're just joining us, we're discussing how COVID-19 affects the heart. We have Dr. Allison Schwartz, who is an infectious disease specialist, Dr. Jimmy Sidhu, who's a cardiologist, both with SSM Health Dean Medical Group. You can join in with your questions. What do you want to know about how COVID affects the heart? Do you have high blood pressure or heart disease? How has that impacted how you respond to safety precautions around the pandemic. Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Sidhu, what other risk factors should people be aware of when it comes to heart health and COVID-19? What are some of the questions you're asking patients?
Well, I think it's the same things that would cause general heart disease as well. You know, patients who are smoking, diabetes. I have a lot of patients who've had previous heart events like heart attacks or stents, or they have rhythm problems already that we treat, and those are people, again, that are more likely to get sicker compared to the average person. So those are the people that I worry about the most. On the flip side, I think, and we may get into this later, I do think we have to find a balance between treating these people, being careful, and at the same time, not letting their treatment fall too far behind. I think one of the lessons we learned over the last 6 months is that completely shutting things down and delaying care also has its consequences, as we're discovering more recently.
We saw early in the pandemic people not going to the emergency room for signs of a heart attack or signs of a stroke, and that was becoming very urgent because, you know, once it gets to that point, it certainly is a medical emergency. Is that how you saw it, Dr. Sidhu?
Yeah, exactly. I think, and this has been well studied and documented as well. There's been studies out of Europe and in the United States as well showing that the people showing up with heart attacks went down by up to 40% in some communities, and yet people dying at home went up exponentially as well. So again, we don't have direct causation, but the initial impression is that a lot of people out of fear chose to stay at home when they probably would have come in otherwise, and some of those people passed away at home from presumably heart disease because of the fear of coronavirus.
Dr. Schwartz, how are you approaching COVID-19 when you know that it hits hard a lot of systems in the body and not just the heart? How do you approach the disease in this way when you have so many different factors going on, systems in the body?
Sure. I think I would just like to echo what Dr. Sidhu said first about making sure that patients are continuing with their regular care and following up with their doctor and presenting for concerns that they have. We've sort of been able to adjust quite a bit since March and make the clinic and the hospital a very safe place for people to be. So we certainly don't want to delay any other care that should be going on at this point. In regards to your other question, I think it's really important to recognize that there seem to be two phases of this illness, and there's still so much to learn, and we're, you know, getting more and more data every day, and there's new studies coming out every day. But in the beginning, I think we thought of it typically as just this viral illness that sort of went awry in the body. And what we're finding out now is that there's actually two phases of the illness. There's the initial viral phase, which may result in, you know, the fevers and some shortness of breath, cough. And then what is happening is that many people are going on into this secondary inflammatory phase. And some arguments are even being made that, you know, the main problem with this is that it's more of a vascular disease or this inflammatory disease, because it's almost your body's own immune system sort of going awry and sending off this massive inflammation response, which begins to then affect other organ systems. And so I think initially when we were really just approaching what to do as far as the virus management and, you know, management of the lungs, because that was the primary organ system which it seemed to attack.
And we have to pause right there. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're discussing cardiovascular disease and the risks for future heart complications after being exposed to the virus that causes COVID-19. It's an hour on your heart health here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The American Heart Association launched a public awareness campaign over the summer called Don't Die of Doubt. It addresses this worrying trend in the pandemic with people not calling 911 or seeking medical care after a heart attack or stroke. And the campaign emphasizes that seconds count and hospitals are the safest place to be in a medical emergency. Have you avoided going to the doctor to check up on your heart? Did you have COVID? Are you still feeling the effects of the virus? We're at 800-642-1234. We have cardiologist Jimmy Sadu and infectious disease physician Allison Schwartz, both with SSM Health Dean Medical Group. Dr. Schwartz, you were discussing there this almost the second phase, this inflammation phase, and what that can do to the body. Carry on with that.
Right. So where I left off, I was just saying that in this inflammation phase, that's where we've learned so much that it's not just about the lungs, but that, you know, all of the organ systems are being attacked, and then most notably the heart. And so that's, again, the importance of our discussion today. And because the heart is such an important organ, why people need to know about these complications and sort of think about that as we all think about this virus.
Dr. Sadu, let's look at myocarditis. Can you tell us a bit about this as it relates to inflammation of the heart?
Right. So myocarditis literally means inflammation of the heart, and it can present in a couple of ways. The most common case is probably related to what Dr. Schwartz was just describing of this. When people are in this inflammation phase, and the body's immune system seems to be wreaking havoc, that immune system can attack the cells in the heart and cause the heart to not be able to do its job. It can lead to rhythm problems, pumping function problems, as well as sometimes, but that's one end of the spectrum. There is evidence to suggest that there may be very small amounts of heart damage also present in people who otherwise are fairly asymptomatic. There were a couple of studies done that got a lot of attention, showing that up to 60% of people who had recovered, had minimal symptoms from the virus, had some changes on their heart MRIs showing that they possibly could have had low levels of myocarditis on their scans.
Could it also relate to some scarring with the heart?
Right. So as these cells get damaged, the sort of the long-term consequence is that, yes, there is some scarring that happens in the heart. And the amount of scarring is going to determine kind of what the long-term consequence that is to the patient. If the scarring is widespread, you could potentially deal with problems of heart failure down the line. What we don't know is what small amounts of damage to the heart from this virus means at this point. There was a study done at Ohio State from recovered college athletes where a large percentage of them had abnormal cardiac MRIs, but most of them had no symptoms, were feeling great, and their heart pumps well. So those people are going to be followed, and we'll see what the future shows.
With this inflammation in the heart muscle, weakening the heart, can it lead to sudden cardiac arrest?
It can. Heart rhythm problems are often more common with more scarring and damage to the heart. The cells are weakened, and the electrical system of the heart gets diseased as well. And certainly we have seen that even in the hospital, that the patients who are really sick aren't always dying from their lungs being necessarily destroyed, but heart complications, either heart failure or heart arrhythmias.
We're talking with Dr. Jimmy Sadu, who's a cardiologist, and Dr. Allison Schwartz, an infectious disease specialist. Both are with SSM Health Dean Medical Group, and we're discussing heart health, the risks of COVID-19 to major organs in the body. Taking your questions as well, have you or someone you know decided to delay heart surgery over fears about COVID? What happened? Tell us your story. What have you heard about myocarditis and its relationship to COVID-19? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Schwartz, Dr. Sidhu mentioned MRIs and being able to take a look just at what type of impact, destruction, if you will, that COVID-19 is having on the body. How important are doing these MRIs and taking a closer look what's going on inside the body?
Well, Kate, I think when we're involved with the patients, it's most notably in the hospital. And so for a majority of those patients, if there is concern for some cardiac issues going on, we would also have our cardiology teams as co-consultants because we're a consulting service as well in the hospital when we see these patients. We would, you know, talk with them and make a determination whether or not that was something to be indicated during the acute hospitalization, or as Dr. Sidhu mentioned, a lot of this is now post-infection follow-up and sort of long-term management and assessment of these patients. So a lot of times in the hospital, I don't think we're, you know, immediately jumping to doing a cardiac MRI, but there's certainly involvement of all these specialists in determining what are the best tests to be done for a patient at a given time, depending what their specific situation is.
Dr. Schwartz, you know, we've heard about turning patients prone in order to improve their airflow, in order for them to catch their breath. If a person has cardiovascular disease or heart disease, what are some things you would think about in terms of that type of treatment?
So that treatment is still something we widely use, and it's really about sort of our anatomy and how air gets into the lungs and then disperses to all of the specific, like, alveoli, which are the actual air cells in the lungs. And if you think about it, actually, the heart sort of sits on top of your lungs. And so if you're laying down in a bed, there is sort of this element of gravity which can impede some of the airflow into those parts of the lungs, especially if someone is very sick with COVID and there's a lot of inflammation. So by proning the patients, it allows them to actually better oxygenate their blood, meaning that more oxygen can get into these other parts of the lungs, which may not otherwise be receiving oxygen. And then when you get oxygen in the lung, it puts oxygen back into your blood, and that, you know, you need good enough oxygen levels in the blood so that you don't put stress on your heart, for example. So it is all tied together, and actually some of the techniques that we're using to make sure that the lung function is stable and that we're getting good oxygen levels will also benefit the heart in that situation.
What about putting someone on a ventilator, Dr. Schwartz? Do you look at their other complications and other issues before you take that step, or what is your approach to ventilators?
Certainly. So that's a decision that also would be made with our critical care colleagues. So if someone's oxygen levels are so low that we can't maintain them just using, maybe people have seen nasal cannulas or other devices where oxygen is being, you know, basically forced into the airways and forced into the lungs, but without needing to be put on a ventilator, it may become a situation where if you can't get enough oxygen exchange, that patient would be someone who is ultimately, you know, in the intensive care unit and consulting with some of our other specialist providers, including the critical care doctors and the lung doctors, to make a determination is the best way to get oxygen to this patient by putting them on the ventilator. Very early on in the pandemic, we were trying to avoid putting putting patients on the ventilator right away. But then we found out over time that a lot of these patients can do okay for a period not on the ventilator. And so that just, again, goes to show how much things have changed since the beginning. We've learned so much, and our techniques and management for these patients are quite different than it was back in March. And that's just because of all of the data and studies and the unfortunate experiences that we've had now seeing so many patients.
Dr. Sidhu, when patients come off a ventilator, cardiac type patients, people with cardiovascular disease, what concerns do you have?
I think it depends on the circumstance of the patient. I think by that time, most people have had a heart ultrasound or something we call an echocardiogram. We have blood tests available on them. So we have some idea of what their status is. I think for somebody whose blood tests were only mildly abnormal and their heart pumps pretty well, I'm not going to be as concerned as I would be as if their heart pumping function seems to have taken quite a hit from this illness. So it kind of depends on the circumstance.
We are learning more about heart disease and the damage caused by COVID-19 with cardiologist Jimmy Sidhu and infectious disease specialist Allison Schwartz. What questions do you have for these medical experts about heart attack symptoms, heart muscle disease, stroke, vascular disease? How are you managing your blood pressure now? Is the stress of the pandemic affecting your heart health? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick this up, maybe hear from you after a news update here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Researchers are calling attention to the cardiac consequences of the coronavirus. Here's Dr. Anthony Fauci last week in a Senate committee hearing. The nation's top infectious disease expert responded to a study that did MRIs on people who'd recovered and found many had some inflammation of the heart.
I think we need to be careful and just watch what happens, because one of the possibilities is that, A, it could clear up and they have no problem for the rest of their lives. The other things that they could wind up, when you have inflammation, you could have scarring. That could lead to arrhythmias later on, or that could lead to cardiomyopathies. I do not know what it would be, but it's something we really need to keep our eye out on.
What will cardiac damage mean long-term for people who recover from COVID? Are you an athlete and monitoring yourself for cardiac symptoms after you tested positive? 800-642-1234. We have Allison Schwartz, an infectious disease physician, and Jimmy Sidhu is a cardiologist, both with SSM Health Dean Medical Group. They're our guides. Let's take Judy now, joining us from Little Chute this morning. Hi, Judy.
Hi, guys. I have a question. I have an autistic son, and he cannot, under any circumstances, get sick because it goes right into his heart. And he's been hospitalized numerous times and almost died. Now, he's been hospitalized, and the group home he is in has been cannot use a whole lot of bleach because the guys have bad reactions to it. They can use it in the dish, doing dishes, they can use it to do laundry. But they've been using hydrogen peroxide to wipe things down and rubbing alcohol. Are there any products that they could use besides hydrogen peroxide and rubbing alcohol to wipe things down that would kill the COVID or protect them from COVID?
Dr. Schwartz, let's start with you.
Sure, that's a good question. You know, many of the, you know, home disinfecting products that exist are, you know, being looked at for use against COVID. I don't know specifically. We have a lot of medical products, and I wonder if the group home he has would have access to any higher supply, things like that. But even just in the news, for example, I saw last week, I believe Pine-Sol was approved, that it works against COVID-19. And so maybe trying to work with them and look around and see, many products are being looked at, things that are available over the counter. We're not dealing with the same shortages that we were back in March, where everyone was, you know, trying to rush buy products. It doesn't necessarily have to be bleach containing in this case, but just have a high enough proportion of alcohol or those chemicals for killing the virus.
Dr. Sidhu, any suggestions on alternatives to bleach?
Right. I think some of the other more basic things would certainly be in play, too. Simple hand washing with soap, as well as we got to remember that a lot of the transmission is happening from aerosols. So wearing masks and protecting yourself from a respiratory standpoint may be just as important as some of these cleaning solutions that we have. And finally, I think a lot of the larger facilities that take care of people with chronic medical conditions, they have really locked down in terms of who can come in and out of these facilities. So if the facility is doing that, hopefully the chances of infection may be quite low.
Judy, thank you for the call. We have another caller here who wanted to ask Dr. Sidhu about coagulation of the blood and how that affects heart problems. Could you elaborate on that at all?
Right. So this, again, goes back to what Dr. Schwartz had mentioned earlier about this inflammatory phase. You know, the inflammation is really body-wide. It affects not only the heart, but it also the lungs. And in this case, we would be talking about the blood vessels. That leads to clotting of blood in the legs and sometimes even in the heart. And sometimes those blood clots can end up in the lungs by a disease we call pulmonary embolism. And the right side of the heart pumps into the lungs. So there are sometimes concerns where we see damage to the right side of the heart from these blood clots, as well as a lot of heart attacks initially are essentially blood clots in the blood vessels of the heart. So there's also an association that perhaps all that inflammation can lead to a higher rate of heart attack and blood clots in the blood vessels of the heart itself.
Dr. Schwartz, what would you say about blood clotting and what you have seen amid COVID?
Sure. For most patients who are coming into the hospital, they are, you know, it's relatively standard that we often give some form of medication or other intervention to help reduce their risk of blood clots. And then oftentimes, if we have more concern regarding a specific patient, at least from an infectious disease standpoint, that's where we would, you know, even recommend, can we have cardiology come see this patient, see if they have additional thoughts or other services to help make the decision? Because if patients, you know, specifically in the hospital, if we're putting them on stronger medication to try and help prevent a blood clot, there's always a risk benefit to that discussion. For general people, you know, outside of the hospital, again, it's not something that we would think of right away, but it is if you have, you know, sudden, as Dr. Sidhu mentioned, we worry about blood clots in the legs, for example. So if you ever notice swelling in your legs or a painful calf or a sudden onset of shortness of breath that's more than you would have had previously, then certainly reach out to your primary care doctor or go to the emergency room. You may need to be worked up further, especially in the setting of COVID-19.
We're talking with Dr. Allison Schwartz, who's an infectious disease specialist with SSM Health. Dr. Jimmy Sidhu is a cardiologist with SSM Health Dean Medical Group. We're discussing heart health, the medical response to COVID-19, and taking your questions front and center at 800-642-1234. We heard from Dwayne in Two Rivers call to ask you about viral load. He wanted to know if people with heart problems are more susceptible to have complications if they are in enclosed places with an infected person versus people interacting outside, for example. Dr. Sidhu?
Certainly, this goes back to what we were mentioning earlier, where a lot of the transmission is through these aerosols in the air. So inevitably, indoor circulation is unlikely to be as strong as it would be as if we were outdoors. And this has been noticed where a lot of the sort of sparks in cases can sometimes be from one event held indoors. So yes, when it comes to thinking about activities that are safer, outdoors is always going to be preferable.
Dr. Schwartz, what about mask wearing in this time?
Absolutely. So I think what we've come to find out over, you know, again, the course of the past 6+ months since March and even earlier, is that masking is one of the best tools that we do have to prevent the spread of this illness. And so, as Dr. Sidhu mentioned, because there's this issue of, you know, kind of a question between aerosolization and droplets, but that we know that the respiratory tract of humans, meaning where your mouth, your nose, your even secretions that you create when you talk, those are all places the virus can come from. And so by wearing a mask, not only do you help prevent the spread, maybe you are not having symptoms yet, or there's even this phenomenon where people may be asymptomatic carriers of the virus, by you wearing a mask, it's actually to protect those around you. There's also an idea that, you know, by you wearing a mask, it may, if there is an aerosol, it's not going to be perfect, or but other droplets, you may be a little bit more protected. And then to me, I always tell my patients, it's a good reminder when you're wearing a mask, not to be touching your face, not to be touching your nose and your mouth. You know, it's sort of a reminder again about doing that hand hygiene, all of these other things. And I know we're all waiting for, you know, is a vaccine going to come out and what's that going to look like? But truly one of the most important tools we already have is masking.
Yeah, so masks are a bit of that barrier, if you will, putting up the barrier between your hands and your mouth. But of course, not touching the eyes, also very important. Dr. Schwartz, have you had enough personal protective equipment in your clinics and in hospital settings? How has that been?
In the beginning, there were some challenges. And, you know, in practice previously, there were lots of patients in the hospital who we would wear masks for or need, you know, protective eye goggles, et cetera. We were caring for those patients. And the clinical practice did change that when there were shortages initially, we were maybe, you know, instead of using a goggle and throwing away, we were using a goggle and then washing it down and using it again. And so it took some adjustments initially. Fortunately, there were some periods where the COVID numbers did decrease, and I think it's given opportunities for supply chains to build back up and us to start to restock. Our hospital, we were very fortunate. I would never say there were major shortages. There were just some adjustments early on, and we've done well with that. And also, the community stepped up in, you know, sewing masks and doing other things that we could hand out to patients and make sure that there wasn't a burden for those mask needs on the medical community so that we as medical providers had what we needed and then the community also had what they needed to stay safe.
Dr. Sudhu, what has your experience been with PPE, the masks, the goggles, the gloves, the shields?
I've been very fortunate. I think we both work at an excellent institution. I've never had a circumstance where I personally felt unsafe, or frankly, where I notice anybody else being forced to be unsafe from being able to not protect themselves appropriately. The case rates in the hospitals, the infection, the chance of getting infection in the hospital has been very low. I think the hospitals locally have done a great job of protecting not only the people who work there, but the patients who are coming in for other medical conditions. So now I think as cases go up, I think the next challenge will be is how we manage if there is another spike in cases, as we're seeing in Northeast Wisconsin, you know, that's going to be the next challenge for hospitals and hospital systems.
We're looking at the risks of cardiovascular disease with COVID-19, how to care for the heart. We have cardiologist Jimmy Sidhu and infectious disease specialist Allison Schwartz. What questions do you have about how COVID affects the heart? Do you manage high blood pressure or high cholesterol? Haven't talked about cholesterol yet. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about heart health with cardiologist Jimmy Sidhu and infectious disease physician Allison Schwartz. The CDC says people at any age who have serious heart conditions, such as heart failure, coronary artery disease, or cardiomyopathies, are at increased risk of severe illness from COVID-19. Well, Dr. Sidhu, you know, it's almost criminal. We've gone through almost a whole conversation, haven't touched cholesterol. You know, what should we bear in mind as we've heard over the years, the good and the bad cholesterol? What should we know?
Well, I think the bad cholesterol is truly bad. I think that's sort of the gist of it. A lot of our therapies these days that are directed at driving down the LDL, which is the bad cholesterol. Over the last couple of years, there have been new medications that have come out that have driven down the bad cholesterol to much lower levels than what we were seeing with statins, things like Lipitor. And what we've noticed is that that's helpful, that people have less heart attacks, less strokes, less chances of getting bad blockages when their cholesterol is driven down further.
Are there any side effects to taking these statins?
There certainly are, but if given to somebody whose risk of heart attack, stroke, and other vascular disease is high, then the risk is substantially lower than the benefit that they would get from preventing one of those events.
What can you do to help improve your cholesterol numbers?
Right. Diet and exercise play a large role, obviously. I think a lot of Western diet that is rich in saturated fats and processed food and fried food, I think that certainly plays a role in changing over to more of a plant-based diet, certainly would be helpful. But it kind of depends on how high your LDL is. There are numbers that really cannot be driven down even with the best of habits, and some people truly need to take a medication in order to get those numbers where they need to be, especially if they've already had an event or if they have diabetes.
Or if they have family history. Can your family history also play a role here?
Absolutely. There's also some people who make that make a very damaging type of cholesterol particle, which you don't need a lot of it floating around to cause a lot of damage. So there are ways that we can study people's cholesterol composition, as it were, and see if they have a particularly damaging kind of cholesterol. And in those cases, yes, the same thing for somebody who's got a pretty normal cholesterol, but the way it's made is abnormal, or if there's already signs that their blood vessels are getting damaged, then you have to be more aggressive in those cases.
Should we be paying more attention to cholesterol levels in children?
Yes, I do think there was just recently a study done showing that the longer you are exposed to high levels of cholesterol, the damage is cumulative over the years. So in people who have very high levels of cholesterol and heart disease that runs in the family, there are sometimes even situations where children need to be started on cholesterol-lowering medication in order to keep them from having problems 10, 20, 30 years down the line.
We're talking with Dr. Jimmy Sadu, who's a cardiologist, and Dr. Allison Schwartz. We're discussing heart health this hour, as well as complications from COVID-19. Taking your questions along the way at 800-642-1234. Dr. Schwartz, looking at, you know, how COVID might change and how the medical community changes with it in terms of treatments and, you know, maybe even a vaccine on the horizon, maybe not, that changes too day to day. But as you look at it, what are you hoping to learn about how the virus works and how you approach treatment?
Sure. I think one of the big questions that I have personally is I know we know that there are certain risk factors which impact a patient's risk to going on to develop severe disease, but what we don't quite know is why that might occur. I've seen patients, you know, who are in their 90s and do quite well with the disease, and unfortunately we've had patients as young as, you know, in their 40s and 50s who succumb to the disease. And so I think, you know, it's been relatively well established as to who is at risk, but then even within that, what I am interested in finding out, and as we learn more about this virus, to identify specifically why it may affect, you know, one person so much differently than another, even if they both share the same risk factors.
Yeah, because I mean, I would assume as a physician, it helps to understand, okay, what is the precedent? What has the impact been in someone else who has presented with the same complications? Because that kind of gives you a bit of a roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Owen now, joining us from Waiawiga. Hi, Owen.
Hi, good morning, Kate. Yeah, so I'm 42 years old, almost, and I weigh about 210 pounds, 5'11". Pretty active life. I work a lot of hours throughout the day. Try not to be sedentary as much as possible. I'm on my feet, but I'm a dairy farmer, and I had a visit from the Rural Health Initiative. They came out and took all the employees here on this farm's blood, and they checked our cholesterol, and several of the patients that were here, Hispanic backgrounds, they all were immediately put on some sort of statins because they had high cholesterol. And I was told that my LDL was really, really low, and my other cholesterol, and I forget the actual abbreviations for it, was really, really high, which is something my mother has as a trait, and she's almost 70, and she's always had really high good cholesterol and really low bad cholesterol. My father has high cholesterol. Anyway, so I thought, okay, I'm in really good shape, and I just continued doing what I'm doing. 6 months later, they sent me something in the mail saying I was at danger of heart attack and stroke because I had really high cholesterol, and I needed to look into getting medication immediately. Well, the other people that were here, they told them to get medication before they left, and they told me I was fine. So this is contradictory, and I haven't followed
up. Yeah,
and I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, we're short on time here, Owen, and I want Dr. Sidhu to respond to you. Dr. Sidhu, what would you say there to Owen's situation?
Yeah, I think this is probably something that's going to need maybe a face-to-face visit to try to parse out. It would depend on what the actual numbers were, but if the bad cholesterol was low and the good cholesterol was high and you're otherwise healthy and there's no family history of early heart disease, in that circumstance, you may be okay without a statin.
And can you put some numbers on this? What does it mean to have high and low?
Right. So I think for somebody who doesn't have established heart disease and is otherwise healthy, doesn't smoke, is not diabetic, we would be looking for an LDL number, hopefully around 100 or less. But if all those other medical conditions are there, or they've already had a stroke or a heart attack, then that number needs to be much lower. It's somewhat controversial how much lower, but at least less than 70.
Well, Dr. Sidhu, I'm wondering, as I had asked Dr. Schwartz, what are you watching for as this virus progresses?
Right. I think as a cardiologist, I'm curious about what happens to people that are feeling fine, but have had low levels of heart damage, either discovered by blood tests or echocardiograms or even cardiac MRIs. What does it look like in the long term? Is that something that's of relevance, or is that something that we just picked up because we checked these things? The other thing I'm looking at is, apart from a vaccine, there is quite a bit of ongoing research to try to study other ways that maybe we could help people. Now, whether that be blocking some of the inflammation that we've been talking about this hour, or blocking the replication of the virus, or even things like convalescent plasma, to see if, because the vaccine may not take care of the entirety of the problem. We may continue to see people get sick in the hospital. And so our challenge as physicians will remain how to take care of these people. So some of this other information and therapies will be very helpful.
Well, thank you both for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Dr. Jimmy Sidhu is a cardiologist, Dr. Allison Schwartz, an infectious disease physician, both at SSM Health, which is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio, for Disclosure. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.